This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. There are photos taken on some of the worst days of people's lives, mugshots, and they can have a life far beyond an arrest. They can follow a person indefinitely online, long after jail time is served or charges are dropped. Some argue mugshots undermine the presumption of innocence and disproportionately impact people of color. And now more and more newsrooms are making the editorial decision not to publish mugshots. Locally, WCPO News will no longer publish mugshots on air and online, with just a few exceptions. So joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss newsroom mugshot policies are WCPO News Director Mike Cannon. Mike, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us on the phone the Marshall Project staff writer, Carrie Blickinger. Carrie, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
And also our good friend from the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, Executive Director and Attorney at Law, David Singleton. David, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you have questions or comments and want to join our conversation, please give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email your questions or comments to talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and get some of those into the show as well. Mike, let's start with you because it was your newsroom's policy that prompted this conversation. Take us back to the internal deliberations or conversations that were taking place inside your organization that led to this very public announcement.
Sure. Well, we started looking at all of our policies and trying to figure out some of the policies that newsrooms have in place have been in place for decades, and no one has ever really reviewed them. It's just sort of a matter of course. You get the mugshot, you publish the mugshot. You get the mugshot, you air the mugshot. And that was one of the things that we started to think about, like what are the ramifications of our actions? And so we started to have internal conversations around like, what would it be like if we did not run any mugshots in our newscasts and on our website? And one of the things that I see in a lot of media organizations is there's sort of like these mugshots that sometimes the only reason there's a story is the mugshot. The person has tattoos all over their face or they're clearly majorly intoxicated. And that's the whole purpose of the story. Their crimes are minor. And in many cases, these people have substance abuse issues or mental health problems. And here we are and we're taking it and we're basically making fun of them. And how ethical is that for us as journalists? And how ethical is that? How good is that for our society and for our culture? It's not good.
And maybe it wasn't as such a big deal when places like WCPO were strictly broadcast, right? I mean, sure, somebody's face would flash up on screen. They might be embarrassed temporarily. But now that things live online, it could have a more lasting impact. So, you know, we're a couple of decades into the digital age. What do you think it is about this moment in time that prompted this conversation at your organization?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a very real piece of the puzzle, right? These mugshots and just crime stories live on forever and in the digital world, and they're very, very Googleable. So we probably get between 4 and 6 requests a month to say, hey, can you take down my photo and the story on me because now I can't find a job? No one will hire me because the first thing they find when they Google my name is this story about some crazy incident. And in many cases, the charges never even went forward. They were never convicted of anything. And people get arrested all the time. And the charges are dropped without anything in the legal proceedings really moving forward much. And so we started to look at it and say, like, how fair is this? I mean, there's a presumption of innocent until proven guilty. And here we are as a media, and we're basically putting these people's faces and their stories out there. And in some cases, no follow-up, right? Like, we're just putting it out there. We're never coming back and saying, yeah, the person was found not guilty, or yeah, the charges were dropped. It's just out there. And at the end of the day, what real news value does that photo bring? And it's very, very limited. It's just a picture. It's not a great visual, right? It doesn't. There's nothing moving. There's nothing powerful about it. It's just a photo. It's a snapshot in time of literally the worst moment in most people's lives.
So this policy isn't a complete ban on the use of mugshots. Can you talk a little bit about the nuance involved in the policy that WCPO has adopted?
Absolutely. So we started to think about, like, what are situations where the mugshot actually brings value to our community, to the coverage? And we sort of identified two main areas. And one would be, hey, for some reason we have the mugshot, like the person was arrested previously, and they're on the loose. This person's a potentially dangerous criminal. They're out and about in our community, and we have a mugshot of them. So that might help identify who this person is or who you need to be aware of. The second thing that kind of came up, and it's actually that we were in court today for Father Drew, was the concept of someone's been arrested. They're no longer on the loose. They're not currently a danger to the public. But there could be other potential victims out there or other alleged victims out there. And so by putting the photo out there, people might be able to recognize, oh, I know that person. That person was hanging around my kids or something like that. And then it allows people to – there's, a value to that photo.
And just to remind our listeners, Father Drew was a local priest in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati serving in multiple parishes who faced some very serious charges from multiple accusers. We've got some news coming down today about – Harvey Weinstein, who has been found guilty on some of these charges. I think it's still developing. I don't have all of the details at my disposal right now. But is there a double standard when we're talking about somebody like him who faced very serious and obviously very credible accusations of sexual misconduct because of rape? When you would see media coverage of it, it's usually a shot from a courtroom or maybe a file photo or a headshot or something from some fancy Hollywood event, rather than a mugshot. Can you talk a little bit about how that works in the media?
Yeah, and so there's a couple different pieces to that puzzle. One is, our newsroom has had a policy for several years now not to ever use mugshots of victims. So someone's shot and killed, and they had previously been arrested for some reason, and some media organizations will run that person's mugshot, even though that may have nothing to do with why they were shot and killed. And just because you committed a crime 2 years ago doesn't mean you deserve to die, right? And so that there's a piece of that. But then there's also sort of the standard of we have this great glamour shot of somebody and we'll use that in place of the mugshot. Like one of the examples that we kind of looked at was, I think it was three University of Iowa wrestlers. Wrestling is the biggest sport in Iowa. And so these guys get arrested for, some crime, and it's their yearbook photo of them in their suit and tie, right? And then, three other African-American young guys get arrested, and it's, of course, their mugshot. So you have to kind of balance those things and make sure that how we're operating is a way that's ethical and responsible.
And just to clarify what I said about Harvey Weinstein, our producer has sent me some notes that he has been found guilty of rape but acquitted of two more serious charges related to predatory sexual assault. Let's bring in Carrie. Carrie is from the Marshall Project. And I apologize, Carrie. We chatted a bit just before we went on the air, and I neglected to ask for the appropriate pronunciation of your last name. So I took a chance on it at the introduction at the beginning. But if you wouldn't mind just helping me out here.
It's Blakinger.
I was right. All right, cool.
You were.
I should have just went with it.
No one gets that right. Good job.
Thank you very much. So Carrie Blakinger is a staff writer at the Marshall Project. Carrie, first tell us what the Marshall Project is.
The Marshall Project is an online-only news outlet that focuses on criminal justice exclusively.
And you were recently interviewed on NPR by Lulu Garcia Navarro. And you talked a little bit about this issue. What are you seeing broadly across the country in terms of newsroom response to mugshot policies?
Well, I think there's a lot of variation in terms of what individual news organizations do. But I will say that journalists themselves, like when I tweeted about the Chronicle, changing their policy and then, wrote a story on it, overwhelmingly the response I got from journalists was positive.
Are you talking about the Houston Chronicle, San Francisco?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
That's all right. I'm in Houston. I meant the Houston Chronicle. yes, they recently changed their policy to eliminate the use of mugshot galleries. So they'll still use mugshots in stories. And obviously a lot of news organizations are not doing that anymore either. But the Chronicle is simply not using the mugshot galleries anymore. And I noticed that journalists, both inside the newsroom and in other newsrooms were very supportive of this. It's not something that a lot of journalists necessarily want to be doing.
And the mugshot galleries that you refer to, oftentimes this is just maybe something as simple as here's the list of people who got arrested last week. It seems that these types of stories, those of us who work in the news business and see website traffic, there's really no argument against the fact that crime stories do really well as a traffic driver. Does that seem to be the primary motivation behind that type of content, Carrie?
Yes, I think that is definitely the primary motivation. I think that's how online mugshot galleries, became a thing in the first place. I also hear some argument, and this tends to be from sort of, an older generation of journalists that tend to be like, well, it's news. Why would we not publish it? Like, it's true and it's factual. Or sometimes they'll say, we're the paper of record. Like, we need to publish it. But, it's not always news. Not every true fact is news. And, you know, the record is in the courthouse, not, it doesn't, you know, some parts of the public record are not published in the newspaper. So that's also a sort of mentality in approaching this that I hear somewhat often.
And really, Carrie, one of the issues was also raised by Mike Cannon, our guest here from WCPO, the news director there, when he talked about how, sure, maybe the facts are correct at the beginning that this person was arrested on these charges, but maybe those charges are dropped later on. Maybe there's a plea to a lesser charge that's not so serious. There's more to the story, and there's a danger in news organizations not following through after that initial arrest report.
Right. Well, that totally happens. But I think that even if someone actually is convicted of the charge for which, you know, they're mentioned in their initial mugshot gallery, if we as news organizations leave that up there for, you know, forever, we're essentially imposing our own added collateral consequence. Like, someone does their time, they get out of prison, like, there are specific consequences. Like, you know, you're on parole, like, you know, you can't vote for some amount of time, can't own a gun. But those are things the judicial system does. And, you know, it just gives me pause when we as news organizations are effectively putting an added collateral consequence onto someone's sentence after they're done serving it.
David Singleton is the director of the Ohio Justice and Policy Center and an attorney at law. David, tell us a little bit about your own client's experience with having to deal with their mugshot having been posted online forever.
It's awful for them. These mugshots destroy lives. They keep the people that we represent from getting jobs. I can't tell you the number of people who've come to OJPC and have said, can you please help us deal with this mugshot that's up, whether it's WCPO, whether it's on the Inquirer's website, or these awful mugshot busted, I don't even want to say magazines. They are...
Well, they're printed.
They're distributed.
A dollar.
You find them in gas stations. And the whole point of those are to humiliate to people, is to humiliate people and make them look like they are not part of the community. And those mugshot magazines, even the use of mugshots on local publications, they destroy lives. And at some point, even if someone, and Carrie spoke to this very eloquently, even if somebody is guilty as charged, at what point do they get to move beyond their guilt and be able to get on their feet, find work, be productive? And publishing these mugshots, keeping them up, get in the way of people being productive and living their lives.
David, do they have any legal remedy if they want to have this fixed, that there's this mugshot attached to a story out there, it's no longer accurate based on what happened to me as my case went through the justice system? Is there any legal recourse?
It's difficult. There is a potential claim that one could make under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. It's sort of an arcane statute that exists that says that if records are not accurate, that you might have recourse there. But it's difficult. At least now in the state of Ohio, as a result of House Bill 6, which passed in 2018, these busted magazine sites, these gallery websites that just have mugshots up there, they can't charge money anymore to people who want to have their mugshots removed. For a while, they were making a killing off of charging people hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to have their mugshots removed. And that can't happen anymore in the state of Ohio.
Carrie, is that something that you've reported on as well, the Marshall Project, some of those outlets that seem to exist solely to publish mugshots?
I mean, that's something that I think people had reported on here before I got here, but that was not part of what I looked at in this story.
Okay. So I do want to note that we reached out to other media outlets in town to talk about their mugshot policies. We should note that here at WVXU, we don't cover a lot of crime stories of the day. So we very seldom have ever published a mugshot at all, but we do not have a formal policy on it. We did receive a response from the Cincinnati Enquirer editor, Burl Love. He said, quote, "We used to run photo galleries, but realized that wasn't sound journalism. We still publish mugshots with major arrests. We reviewed that whole police blotter strategy. Now the crime has to arise to a level of newsworthiness, has to be something that the community needs to be aware of for public safety purposes, etc." He says, "I'm not going to say there aren't still stories we call, quote, talkers. We might run it." And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. We will continue our conversation about mugshot policies and local newsrooms in just a moment. And later, how one local treatment center works to help addicted mothers and now their children. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our conversation about the use of mugshots in media. And we're joined in the studio today by WCPO News Director Mike Cannon. WCPO recently changed their policy. Mike, thanks for sticking around with us. And on the phone is the Marshall Project staff writer, Carrie Blakinger. Carrie, thank you for being with us as well. And also in the studio is Ohio Justice and Policy Center Executive Director and Attorney at Law, David Singleton. David, thank you as well. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. We'll go to the phone lines now. We have Andrew on the line. Hi, Andrew. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Just wanted to say thank you for having this discussion. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Thank you.
You know, laws change. People have a bad night. They make mistakes. You know, I think that this is a really important conversation because we can be extremely punitive with online profiles, with employers Googling people and making snap judgments. And I think that conversation is really important because, you know, people make mistakes and being able to move past it, I think, society is really, really important. So thank you for the conversation, and I'll take my response off the air.
Andrew, we do appreciate that very much. Thanks so much for the call. Carrie Blakinger from the Marshall Project, who joins us on the phone. Carrie, you have a personal perspective to this story in addition to a journalistic one. Would you mind sharing a little bit of that with us?
Yeah, sure. In 2010, I got arrested while I was in college. I was struggling with drug addiction. I'd been addicted to heroin for a number of years at that point. And when I got arrested, you know, my mugshot was one of those sort of terrible, stigmatizing faces of meth looking mugshots where I'd like picked up my face, I had scabs, and, you know, my hair was all messed up. And, you know, I mean, obviously when I got arrested, I wasn't proud of that mugshot, but I think I didn't really sort of realize how much people would comment on it and the sorts of reactions it would generate until after I got out. I ended up doing 21 months in jail and prison. And when I got out, I saw all these comments and, you know, online and in my, you know, Facebook messages and email. And, you know, most of them were really nasty. They were things like, you know, telling me that, calling me words I can't say on the radio. Or they were, you know, describing how I should have died or saying, ha, 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 hope you rot in prison. And, you know, it was, to me, it made me think like, okay, if this is what people will say when they believe they're anonymous, and then are these the thoughts that everyone else is having as well? Is this what, you know, potential employers think? Is this what, you know, potential landlords think? And, you know, I was very fortunate in that I was able to get a second chance and rebuild my life. And I think, you know, part of that obviously stems from, you know, class privilege and white privilege and, like, educational opportunities that I've enjoyed that not everyone who does time benefits from.
Carrie,
but, you know, I still... Oh, Go ahead.
No, no, I apologize for interrupting your thoughts, but now that we're here, let me just say that it sounds like what you just said was you served 21 months, and after that was over is when you saw the comments. And I'm guessing that those comments were left during a news reporting before you went in or around the time that you were sentenced. So they just lived online for nearly 2 years?
Yes. I mean, those comments were all made while I was in jail awaiting sentencing and then while I was doing my time. And, you know, in some cases, places will end up deleting the comments, like after if they redo their websites years later or something. So some of those comments are not still online, but, you know, the stories themselves are the stories that generated those comments, and the mugshots are. And in fact, there's one place that I did an interview with about this story, and they actually put my mugshot in the story about why you shouldn't use
mugshots. Oh, no. did you have to take any action at all to try to have that removed? Not necessarily from that story, which seems like a weird place to use it, but in any of the prior coverage?
I actually did not. I didn't ask to have it removed. I don't think it occurred to me to do that or that was an option. You know, and a lot of news outlets won't honor that if you ask them anyway.
David Singleton is the executive director of the Ohio Justice and Policy Center and an attorney at law here in town. David, we just heard Carrie's story, and look, she did some time, and it was a drug charge, and you kind of heard her talk about, you know, what a difficult position her life had been in. Just talk a little bit about a perspective from that. These are folks who are going through some very troubling times and then have their face blasted online to be ridiculed by their neighbors.
Let me say, I can't say it better than Carrie, because she was directly impacted by what happened as a result of her mugshot being broadcast. I will say this, though. What it sounds like to me is that she had a little piece of her humanity stripped from her. And the question is do we want to take people's humanity away? That's one of the reasons why I'm delighted about WCPO's new approach to this, because it recognizes that if it's not newsworthy, why wreck someone's life? Why diminish them as human beings? We shouldn't be doing that as a society. And, you know, Carrie has a right to be forgotten. I was talking to your producer before, and she was telling me about the EU's approach to this in terms of a law that was passed in the EU about the right to be forgotten and to move on past your mistakes. And that's an approach that we need to take in this country if we truly want to be civilized.
Mike Cannon is the news director at WCPO. Mike, we're talking about your new mugshot policy. What about the archives? What about past instances online where WCPO.com has included mugshots in the reporting? Is there an effort to go back and remove any of those?
Yeah. So one of the things is that there are a lot of them, right? And going back and finding every single one would be a little bit of a challenge. Now, as Carrie said, you know, sometimes as you change content management systems that you're using to actually publish your website, things get sort of lost in the shuffle with that. So there are some older stories that no longer exist in the World Wide Web for both good and bad, right? There's some great journalism out there that you can't find anymore. And there's also some things like this that you can't find anymore. We have now also published our official sort of content removal policy. This involves photos and stories. And essentially, we have a three-person committee internally that reviews all requests. And the things we're looking for is, what's the current relevancy? Like, does this story still matter to our community? And then also things like, what's the actual legal disposition of this case? If the charges were dropped and this was 5 years ago and they were relatively minor charges, we're much more likely to remove any of that content. Any of the mugshots now, if you send us an email, like if you go to our website, there's a link where you can send an email that'll come directly to me and to the other folks on our committee that review this. Any mugshots that are up there right now, I have to just request it and we'll remove those mugshots. But anything more extensive than that, like I want this story taken down from like, you know, 3 years ago, we have some criteria that we look at to make sure that we are going through the process appropriately and you know, look, anybody who committed some crime or did something would, of course, want their story taken down. But we also want to preserve some semblance of the record. But we want to make sure that we're doing that in a fair and ethical way.
Mike, you talked a little bit before we went on about the response that the station received for its mugshot policy. In comparison with the announcement of another policy that's relatively new at the station as well, you're cutting back on, you're changing the way that you refer to race in stories like this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and then explain the difference in reaction?
Sure. So what we did was really just clarify our policy. Like most media organizations have long had policies where they say, look, we're not just going to throw around just the race if that's the only description that we have. Like it's a, you know, the suspect is a black male, right? That's really provides no information. I always tell people when they push back on this, you know, you say the suspect is a white male. Well, that's me. That's you. There's a bunch of different people that that is. Like that doesn't really help us identify the actual suspect in any way. And law enforcement will tell you the same thing, right? So we had a policy that's similar to most policies in newsrooms that was basically like, we'll only use race as a description if we have enough criteria that someone could actually identify a person based on the description that law enforcement's providing. Well, that's really vague, right? Like, I mean, what's enough to you might be different than what's enough to me. So what we did is actually put down in writing a policy that's we must have five specific items that we could use to identify someone. And so the things on the list are like, you know, sort of height, weight, race and gender, any like physical characteristics, scars, tattoos, clothing, hair, style, color, et cetera. That just helps sort of codify what we're trying to do. So that way it makes it a little easier for our staff rather than it be something that's vague. It also makes it, I think, a little easier for us to explain. And so we got reaction to both of these policies. They rolled out within about a month or so of each other. And I would say that the reaction to the mugshot policy, first of all, it was really divided by where that reaction came. Facebook was about 50-50. Twitter was probably like 80% positive, 20% negative. Email at the beginning was like 75 to 80% positive, and then like, you know, 10 or 15% negative, and then some neutral. And then over time, the sort of long tail traffic on email and the mugshot policy, there became a little bit more negative. The reaction to the sort of using race as a description was a lot more negative. I would say it was at best 40% positive, 60% negative. And what was interesting about that to me is we were really just expanding on an existing policy and making it a little bit more clear. But one of the reasons that we did that is one of the most common questions that I get as a news director is, why didn't you have the race of the suspect in this crime story? And oftentimes we don't even have it. Like law enforcement doesn't have it. They don't know who did it. Like so, or they have so little information that there's no way anyone's going to identify them. And so just trying to help people understand why we do what we do.
Well, I do want to thank WCPO News Director Mike Cannon, the Marshall Project staff writer Carrie Blakinger, who joined us on the phone. And Carrie, thank you so much for sharing your personal story with us as well. Very much appreciated. And also Ohio Justice and Policy Center Executive Director and Attorney at Law David Singleton for coming back in and joining us. Thanks to all three of you. We appreciate the conversation. Up next, we're joined by a local mother battling addiction who is receiving treatment at a new center that works to keep her with her child. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is... Subscribe to our podcast at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks.